You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Disease Du Jour podcast. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, and in this episode, I spoke with Dr. Melanie Perry about equine rehabilitation modalities, including mesotherapy, laser, and kinesiotape. This episode of Disease Du Jour is brought to you by Equithrive. After graduating from the École Nationale Vétérinaire de Lyon, France, Perry completed an equine surgical internship in California, followed by a large animal surgery residency at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Perrier was then a clinical assistant professor of large animal surgery and critical care at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, before returning to private practice in the Middle East and France. Perrier is now a senior lecturer in equine surgery at the Royal Veterinary College, United Kingdom. Her main interests are soft tissue surgery, equine rehabilitation, and management of the equine athlete. Thank you, Dr. Perry, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So when evaluating a case for rehabilitation, how do you decide which modalities to include in your treatment plan, and how do you integrate these into your broader management strategy?
So that's a very good question and a very important point to start with. I think the basis to putting a good rehabilitation plan together is to first develop a good problem list. And usually on top of the problem list, we have our most accurate diagnosis. So we need to find what is the primary source of the problem in our patient. And this is, unfortunately, in horses, not always straightforward. And sometimes, you know, we have to get into some more advanced diagnosis to get the full picture. And, you know, we may have to treat actually not one, but two or three different lesions that may be, you know, the source of the problem. So these all need to be taken into consideration. And beside the primary problem, we also need to assess the patient for any functional and structural problem or secondary, I would say, pathology that could be associated with the primary problem. So it's not unusual, for example, for some of her patients to have back pain associated with lamenesses or even sometimes neck pain. So this also needs to be taken into account into your rehabilitation plan. So, you know, treating the primary problem, but also addressing any secondary issue that can arise from that. And then the second, I think, thing to take into consideration is what you want to address, what issue you want to address. So a lot of the time with rehabilitation modality, we want to make the horse more comfortable. So we want to make them, you know, a little bit less painful. We want to address stiffness, muscle fatigue, hypertonicity, weakness. So you need to kind of make sure, you know, what exactly you're targeting. And then the phase of tissue healing is also very important because different modalities obviously have different mode of action and will be more efficient at addressing certain physiological problems. So it's very important to know whether you're in the acute, subacute, or chronic phase and whether you want, you know, to address the inflammatory process or if you want to act on the proliferative or remodelative phase of healing. Because again, you know, in the inflammatory phase, for example, most of the time, we want to address pain, but we want to mainly control inflammation and, you know, prevent further injury. In the proliferative phase, most of the time, you know, we're looking more at promoting function, protecting the integrity of the repair tissue, restoring full range of motion. While in the remodeling phase, we look at regaining stress and endurance, restoring coordination, optimizing motor control, for example, and so forth. So those obviously are different goals. And so once you've put all this into perspective, so your diagnosis, your healing phase, and what you're trying to achieve, I think it's very important to have a good discussion with the owner, the trainer, the rider about, you know, what the goals are going forward. Try to put some, you know, achievable goals and put some kind of like stepping stones where you're going to, you know, give you an objective, a timeline, and making sure that you're on the right track. So looking at what modalities you're going to use, how often you're going to use them, and then reevaluating the patient, I think it's something that's very important also in your rehabilitation protocol, making sure that you assess the patient at regular interval. And this is assessing not only clinically, but maybe also using some more objective modality, whether it's diagnostic imaging or objective gait analysis, to make sure that your rehabilitation protocol is actually working and you're actually going in the right direction. And then, you know, I guess there's usually two plan of action. Either you're going on the right direction and you can, you know, increase the frequency of your exercise or, you know, reduce certain type of modality, or you don't really have the results that you're expecting and you may have to modify a little bit your treatment. You may have to modify the doses that you're using. You may have to use different modalities if the modalities that you're using are not working. And sometimes you may have to also revisit your diagnosis a little bit, because obviously if you're not having the effect that you're expecting, that could be, you know, different problem. Either, as I said, the modalities are not used correctly, or, you know, as I said at the mention at the beginning, your diagnosis maybe was not as accurate as you thought it was. So yeah, and then it's also, again, taking into consideration owners and riders' compliance, how much, you know, they're willing to put, because this is important. Some of those rehabilitation protocol can be quite intense, so you have to make sure that the clients are on board with that. And that's also taking into consideration the financial commitment that this entails. Some of those modalities, you know, myself in the United Kingdom, a lot of the horses are insured, so they will be taken, you know, into consideration by the insurance companies, but some clients don't have insurance. And some of those treatment can be quite pricey. So it's, you know, so again, you know, looking at globally all those different factors, that's going to shape a little bit how you're going to put your rehabilitation protocol together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. And thank you for that great overview. This episode of Disease Du Jour is sponsored by Equithrive. Brought to you by Equithrive, the leaders in respiratory science, Medicare is a new pelleted daily supplement offering metabolic support for easy keepers. Medicare was formulated by Pat Lawless, PhD, to support optimum carbohydrate and fat metabolism, healthy body weight, and appropriate insulin levels in horses, thanks to a proprietary combination of resveratrol, flavonoids, and amino acids. Learn more at www.equithrive.com. I'm looking forward now to talking about some of these different modalities in a little bit more detail. So maybe starting with mesotherapy, can you briefly explain what this modality is and what conditions it's commonly used to treat?
Yeah, so mesotherapy is a modality that I use quite commonly and I quite like. So it's the general principle is to delivering a smaller quantity of medication or treatment, if you want, that will be released over a period of time. Because when you're doing mesotherapy, so the principle is you have this linear injector, which has five very small fine needles. Those needles are usually shouldn't be at least more than 4 millimeter depth to be able to deliver the medication in the dermis part of the skin in the horses. And that what will make the delivery slower. So it's a great modality because it's quite easy to perform. It's something that you can perform in a hospital setting or on the road at the yard or at the farm. It's quite economic. You just need, as I said, that linear injector, the small needles. I usually use also an injecting line to make things a little bit better. And then there's various medication that you can deliver that way. When I started, I usually used a mixture of local anesthetics, so usually mepivacaine with some serapin, which is the pitch planter extract, and then some vitamin B selenium. In the UK, we're pretty limited to what we can use medication-wise. So I usually, because we don't really have access to serapin, so I usually use mepivacaine plus minus vitamin D complex, and sometimes I use some steroids also in the mixture. Some people also have put other drugs such as Tromil. But I think the most important component of the therapy is to use some local anesthetic to actually relax the muscle, because that's pretty much what we use this modality for. So for me, the condition that I most commonly treat with mesotherapy are neck and back pain. I think this is probably what the main indication is, and that could be primary or secondary neck and back pain. So it could be a treatment on its own. When I was in the Middle East, I've had a lot of horses that were endurance horses that do quite long races up to 120 kilometers with rider on their back. And they do get sore back from that. So mesotherapy could help kind of release that back pain, you know, after a long race and try to get the horse back into training a little bit sooner. Or I've had horses that, for example, have kissing spine or caudal neck arthritis and do develop some, you know, muscle stiffness or pain secondary to that. So you can treat the primary problem and use the mesotherapy to relax the muscle as an additional component to your treatment, if that makes sense.
Right. How many treatments are typically required?
So this is variable. I usually, most of my patients do just one or two treatments, but it really depends on the clinical response that you have. So I usually start with one treatment. And as I mentioned initially, I would reevaluate my patient quite often and see how they respond to the mesotherapy. So I normally do the treatment. I give them 1 to 2 days off and then they go back into training. And I usually like to recheck them 10 days to 2 weeks post-injection and make sure that we have a response. And so with mesotherapy, a lot of the response is just like, you know, a bit subjective by clinical examination and making sure that the initial pain that you had on palpation, whether on the neck or on the back, has resolved. And then it's a lot of communication with the rider, the owner of the horse, to see whether, you know, the clinical sign come back or not, at which point we can do a second treatment. But as I said, most horses after one treatment, because I guess what you're trying to achieve is once you've taken the pain component away, the aim will be to, again, put your horse into a rehabilitation program so you can build that top line, so all those muscles, whether on the neck or on the back, depending on the area you were treating. So try to build that muscle so, you know, you can support the neck and the spine. So you shouldn't need too many treatments to achieve that. But as I say, sometimes 1 to 2 treatments. And for some horses, you have to repeat it, you know, depending on what they do as a job and how intensely they are worked. You might have to do it, you know, once a year or repeat it before or after the season is finished.
Right. Are there any conditions for which this treatment is contraindicated?
Not really. We don't normally use it in distal limbs just because of the way things work. The skin is quite thin. And to be honest, I don't think it will have quite a good indication for distal limb pathology. So yeah, as I said, normally more back, neck and sacroiliac. Obviously, if you have any kind of wound in the area or if any infection, you shouldn't probably use the modality and you should wait for it to be, for the infection to resolve before you do use the mesotherapy.
Okay, great. So another therapy that's become pretty popular is laser therapy. Can you explain a little bit about how this works? And are there any particular injuries or stages of healing where laser therapy is most beneficial?
Yeah, so yeah, laser is something definitely that's been growing over the last few years. I mean, obviously, as a surgeon, we've used laser for a long period of time for obviously more surgical practices, but over the last few years, we've seen the increase in what we called therapeutic laser in veterinary medicine. So laser stands for light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. And so pretty much it's light therapy, and it kind of utilizes penetrating photonic energy to achieve physiological and biochemical changes within the targeted tissues. So laser is used for really kind of different indication. And as we were mentioning at the beginning, a different stage really of the healing process. Well, I guess the main indication for using the laser is to reduce pain. And again, there's been quite a few studies looking at, you know, how that works. And there's different pathways for which, you know, the laser can reduce pain. It increases serotonin levels. It increases beta endorphins. It increases the nitric oxide, which will have an effect on vasodilation and will also enhance oxygen delivery. decreases bradykinins, and it also normalizes some of the ion channels. So that's, and it also has, in some extents, some increased nerve cell action potential and some effect directly on the nerve fibers. We also use it to reduce inflammation. And so that's something that, again, as a surgeon, it's a function I quite like, especially on my post-op patient. So again, you know, there's still, well, pain and inflammation are kind of closely related. But looking specifically at reducing the inflammation, laser acts on ATP production, again, stimulates vasodilation by the nitric oxide route. It also reduces the production of interleukin 1. It also decreases the prostaglandin synthesis and promotes angiogenesis. So this will all, you know, be interesting in that kind of phase of healing. And then finally, we also, this is maybe a modality that's a bit less understood, especially on the equine side of things, but we use it to promote healing. So initially, we've seen it a lot for wound healing, although now the scientific evidence is not as clear-cut whether it does actually improve wound healing or not. So I think it's been a bit less used for that. But on the healing side of things, nowadays it's used for tendon pathology. So especially when you have lesion on the superficial deep digital flexor tendon, again, with maybe some, you know, controversial scientific evidence. But again, at least there is some scientific evidence, maybe not in the equine side of it, but more general, that it enhances leukocyte infiltration, it increases macrophage activity and neovascularization, it increases fibroblast proliferation. And so all these should, you know, ultimately promote healing, again, mainly by enhancing the release of growth factors. So, great. Yeah.
So what are the different classes of laser, and how do you determine the appropriate settings and dosage for your patients?
So there's pretty much four classes of lasers, so class 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the basis for all the four major laser classification is the potential to cause histological damage to the eye or the skin. So pretty much the higher the laser class, the more power, but also the more side effect you would have, mainly for the user. Class 1, and so I would say in veterinary medicine, probably the class 3 and 4 laser are the one that would be most commonly used for treatment because they have a deeper penetration, and a lot of the indication that we use those lasers for will require this type of power, I would say. While the class 1 and 2 laser would be the laser that would initially have been used more for wound healing or just like maybe some more superficial tissue condition. So I would say the class 1 and 2 are not commonly used, probably more the class 3 and 4 laser. But you have to remember that with those class of laser, there is some regulation associated with it. So the class 4 lasers should really only be used by a veterinary professional. And when in use, you have to make sure that you wear protective eyewear and that you comply with laser safety. So you should have a sign posted when the laser is used and so forth.
What does a typical treatment plan look like? Are you treating the horses every day or every few days? And how long does treatment typically last?
Yeah, so that's again a very good question. And I think that's a little bit where the rehabilitation protocol gets a little bit more blurry. I think we don't really have any evidence of a perfect protocol for, you know, a certain type of injury. And this is something we probably are still working on, you know, getting the scientific evidence for. But again, I think looking at the frequency, it will depend a little bit on, again, what you're trying to achieve and what phase of the healing you are into. So usually, if, for example, we use it for pain management or edema reduction after a specific surgical procedure, I would usually do 1 to 2 treatments after the procedure and then kind of see the clinical response that we have. If we're trying to treat an acute condition, so something that has happened, you know, in the last few days, we usually, the recommendation is to do, you know, daily to every other day treatment for at least a total of like anywhere from like 3 to 6 treatments, again, depending on your clinical response. But yeah, for acute condition, I usually start by doing it every other day, because realistically, and well, unless the horse is in the hospital, it's sometimes not really feasible to go every day to a yard to treat a horse, unless you are in a rehabilitation facility.
Right.
So I do that, every other day for the first week, see the clinical response, and then I try to space them out a bit more, or, keep on the same protocol if, I still don't have like the clinical response that I want. For a more chronic condition, again, it's a little bit depending on what you're treating and what laser you're using and so forth. But we usually do treatment maybe once a week or twice a week, and then again up to a certain amount of treatment, sometimes like about 10 treatments, and then we space them out. And really, when we're just using it for maintenance, it might just be once a month, or just treating as needed to maintain the effect that you want. So more into, maintaining a horse that is, in training, you wouldn't do it as often, if that makes sense.
Right.
And then I think you asked me about the dosage, or like the what kind of protocol we use. So again, it depends on the type of condition. So usually for more superficial tissue condition, we use about 1 to 5 joule per centimeter square. And that's normally, again, something that we use for superficial condition, and maybe more into the inflammatory phase of the disease. For more superficial musculoskeletal condition, you can go from 8 to 20 joule per centimeter square. And then for deeper musculoskeletal condition, we can go all the way up to like 30, 35 joule per centimeter square. But so some the higher kind of power setting. But I would say most of the condition we treat, you'll be around 8 to 10 joule per centimeter square and lower.
All right, great. Thank you. That was a great overview of laser. I know another modality that you've worked with is kinesio tape. Can you explain how this works in horses, and what conditions do you find it beneficial to treat?
So this is something that I started working maybe a bit more recently compared to maybe the mesotherapy. And it's actually a modality that I quite like. So the kinesio tape, as the name says, is the application of an elastic tape over a certain region. So it's usually a tape that stretches along its longitudinal axis up to 130-140% of its length. And the main mechanism of actions, there's a few different pathways for the tape to work. So when you apply it, and they have some like good pictures in some of the scientific reference, it actually lifts the skin and it increases the space in the soft tissue, and kind of opens all your vascular pathway and lymphatics, facilitating circulation. And so not only removal of inflammatory substances, but also decrease pressure on the nociceptors, so decrease pain. And then it has also receptive stimulation. That is something we use maybe more in the remodeling phase of healing. And then it acts by what we call the gate control theory, which is pretty much the fact that when you have a nociceptive, so a painful stimulus, it's usually the smaller nerve fibers that are, so the A delta and C nerve fiber. And then when you apply the tape, you're creating a destructive stimulus that's going to actually activate those larger nerve fiber, the A alpha, A beta. So pretty much it tells your brain that it kind of like bypasses the noxious stimulus. And that's how it creates this kind of feeling that you're actually, feeling better.
So how long does this tape last once you apply it? And how many reapplications do you typically recommend?
Yeah, this has been my struggle since I've been using it. And I've used different tapes and a different technique. We also have in the UK lots of cobs. They have lots of hair and feathers, which sometimes makes it really difficult. So in those, you definitely have to clip and spend quite a bit of time cleaning the skin and making sure. So I usually, what I've found is most useful is not always clipping. If you have, a horse that's not too hairy, it's not necessary, but usually cleaning the skin with warm water and some kind of soap is usually what works best. The Hibiscrub and the alcohol is the worst, and we use it a lot in the hospital for various reasons. But then when you try to put the tape on top of that, it usually doesn't stick. I think in the human literature is that you can like leave it up to 5 days and you can, you know, shower with it and everything. I think in the best condition I've had, probably 2 to 3 days is the best I've had it stick on. Sometimes in some horses, you have to replace it a bit more often. So even every day to every other day. But yeah, cleaning the skin and applying. So Vetkin Tape's got some tape and they have like this spray that you can pre-spray the skin in to make the tapes stick a bit better. And that seems to be a bit helpful. But yeah, so I would say it's 3 days, but it's quite convenient because you can keep doing, you know, what you normally do with the horse. And in some cases, you can also, you know, still hose the leg or, yeah, walk the horse with the tape on. And I think, yeah, I didn't mention it, but I really commonly use it for lymphangitis or swelling post-op, especially in areas that are difficult to bandage. And I've had really good success with it in decreasing edema and pain around those surgical incision. Or, you know, again, we've had some cases, because I work in the referral hospital, we've had several cases of really extensive lymphangitis that were not really responsive to medical treatment or even typical bandaging. And with the application of the kinesio tape in a lymphatic fashion, I was actually amazed at the result that we get, and especially in reducing the swelling, but also the comfort of the horse.
Oh, wow. It's interesting how that modality has really sort of come into the equine space and seems like it's had a lot of success there. So that's great. Are there any other rehab modalities that you would like to mention, or any emerging modalities that we might want to look out for in the future?
I mean, I think there's already quite a few modalities that are available on the equine market. I'm not sure I know about any new emerging technology coming up. I know there are some more on the human side of things. Other modalities that I use quite commonly, I mean, physical therapy, heat and cold. I think they're very simple, economic and easy, well, depending what you use, but they're still very efficient, especially cold therapy, but yeah, also heat to some extent. So this is something we definitely incorporate to your rehabilitation protocol quite often. Any kind of, you know, exercising aid. So you use the Equibend quite a bit, receptive pads, and then we do work a lot with some physiotherapists looking at doing all kind of mobilization, bending, lateral bending, core mobilization. There's a lot of demand where I'm at currently for hydrotherapy. We have a couple of places that offer underwater treadmill, and the clients are really, I think, looking for this type of modality. Hydrotherapy is not my favorite rehabilitation modality. I think you really have to be careful about the selection of your cases and how you use it, but it definitely has a place, you know, in some cases to be integrated in your rehabilitation protocol. But for the future, I think more than modalities is trying to, again, refining the protocols for the modality that we have, getting a better understanding and maybe get a better monitoring of the healings and how those modality influence healing, whether it's with, you know, the advance we have in diagnostic imaging. I think there's some good promises nowadays, especially in the UK, the standing CT has been more and more available. And I think it would be really interesting if we can use it to monitor healing of certain injuries and see how much, you know, the modalities that we use can influence that, you know, healing in a way. And then artificial intelligence also, I think, is something that we talk a lot. And I think it might be something that we can, again, incorporate in your rehabilitation protocol, trying to be a bit more efficient at, you know, refining our protocol and, again, monitoring the response that we have for each modality and, you know, each protocol, and see if we can refine that a bit better.
Do you have any advice for veterinarians who are interested in expanding their rehabilitation offerings, or any training or certification paths that you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few training available across the world. When I was working at the University of Tennessee, I did the CERP training, which is the certification for equine practitioner. And that's something I'll definitely recommend. I've been part of it as a tutor, but obviously also as a student. And I think it's a good It's a good program. And so at the time, it was only done at the University of Tennessee. But now I think they have various programs because there's like a more like there's like three different modules. And it's like a bit of a hybrid where you have some face-to-face teaching and then some classes that are more online. The face-to-face teaching I thought was really good, especially if you're starting, and I was at the time, into all this like different modalities. You get to play with them a little bit on yourself and then putting them on the horse. I thought that was very useful. The tutors were really good. So it's a really good program. And I think now they're also doing sessions in Europe. The CIRAL in France also, so I haven't done that, but I know they're offering some physio-specific courses. Again, I think most of them you can do even while you're working, so like kind of like an alternate program. Some of them are more or less extensive, but so again, I've not done them, but I've heard some very positive feedback on that. For kinesio taping, I took the Vetkin Tape online course. Solange Michael is the one that does it. And I thought it was very well done and it was very useful. So definitely something I would recommend. And then there's obviously all kind of different, I think, training for specific modality, whether it's acupuncture or so forth. So I know, yeah, there's, but I'm a bit less, I don't do acupuncture myself, so I'm a bit less familiar with those. But there's definitely some more specific area of rehabilitation that have specific courses for them.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming onto this episode and giving us this overview of these different modalities. I think this has been really helpful and really great to learn more about some of the options that you've been employing in practice.
Thank you.
I'd like to say thank you again to Dr. Perry for joining us, and thank you to Equithrive for supporting this episode. And as always, thank you to our audience for listening to Disease Du Jour. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at csisson@equinenetwork.com.